we've got to think like customers, right? When we're buying from a brand online and we see the store of that same brand, to us as customers, it's the same company. From a customer's point of view, it's just such an important feature.
You're listening to the Keep Optimizing Podcast to increase your traffic, improve your conversion rates, and grow your profits.
Hello and welcome. I'm Chloe Thomas, the host of this e-commerce marketing focus podcast. If you're not familiar with our format, well, each month we focus on a different marketing strategy, and each week I interview a different expert to explore the latest advice on making it work for you. This month, though, we're about omnichannel, selling via channels other than your website in your home country. That's not a marketing method, I hear you cry. Well, no, it's not a marketing method, but success in each channel is very dependent on your marketing. So why are we covering this? Well, with e-commerce becoming increasingly competitive and an increased focus on building customer relationships, it's so important to make sure you're selling your products in the places that will bring you the sales that you need, in those places that your customers expect to find you. And by going into multiple channels, you potentially gain greater profits, you de-risk the business. It can be great for customer retention, for customer recruitment. And it may be that you've been investing in facilities, in infrastructure that mean you have to be hitting a certain sales target. And of course, if you've got more channels running, you've got more chance of doing that. There are lots of reasons to be selling via additional channels. And all this month, we'll be exploring the ins and outs of it all to help you do it well. In this episode, we're kicking off with the original retail channel, physical retail. I've got a super knowledgeable guest joining me who really knows his stuff, and he'll be taking us through common mistakes to avoid, what to do if you want to get it right first time, what's working in retail right now, loads of good stuff coming up, and plenty of his advice would be relevant whatever channel you choose to diversify into. So do make sure you listen right to the end of the episode, because at the end, he will be sharing some quickfire insider tips to help you maximize the performance of omnichannel. And I'll be sharing my take on it all and outlining some other free ways we can help you right now to improve your business even more. So stay tuned to the end. Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee, knowing, as they do, that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience. Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain and Italy by visiting keepopt.com/Shopify and downloading the report. That's keepopt.com/Shopify. In this episode, I'm chatting with omnichannel expert Oliver Banks. Oliver is the founder of retail consultancy OB & Co., host of the Retail Transformation Show podcast, author of the brand new best-selling book, Driving Retail Transformation, How to Navigate Disruption and Change, which is already described by Boots UK's chief digital officer as essential reading for any retail leader. And Oliver is also, like me, one of LinkedIn's top retail voices. Yeah, that's the proper solid blue badge option on LinkedIn. So we're both very proud of that. Oliver, hello. Thank you so much for joining me.
Chloe, hi. It's so fantastic to be here on the Keep Optimizing podcast. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant to have you here. And I think we've been plotting an episode together since we got blue badged last year, didn't we? So
I think so.
It's good to finally get it done. Congratulations on the new book. That's all very exciting.
Thank you so much. It's been a bit of a whirlwind tour since it came out in March. And yeah, loving every second, as you know, as a fellow author.
Yes, author life is a whole different ballgame of challenges and opportunities. But we won't get into that now. All opportunities, all good. Let's go back a few years. How did you end up in the wonderful world of retail?
So there's a couple of different angles as to how I ended up in retail. The official angle was that I was actually originally in engineering, so doing mechanical and systems engineering, and I decided a career change. So I looked around all of the different industries for something that was fast-paced and meaningful to people, and retail fitted the bill. So I moved into the wonderful world of Tesco and immersed myself fully in the world of supermarket and grocery, and eventually into the broader retail setting as well. So a fantastic entry point there. The more unofficial one was actually, it's an area that I've skirted around with for a number of different years far before I joined Tesco. So I used to work with my mum doing Dolls House markets and selling Dolls House accessories to people. I used to run up my own e-commerce business as well, selling cocktail glassware and barware to people as well, back in the day where e-commerce wasn't quite as easy as it is right now, and getting into coding websites and learning how to do all that. So that was an experience a long time ago. So it's always been an industry that I've been in and around, but it was when I moved into Tesco that I really thrust forward.
And now you get to work across lots of different brands, don't you, with what you do with your consultancy. So I'm really looking forward to picking your brains on that and finding out what we should be doing at the moment and what's going on. But so I, in my podcast, am one of those who talk so much about online and not enough about physical retail. So for all our audience who hear so much about online and so little about physical retail, what's the opportunity at the moment? Why is this an interesting channel people should be exploring?
Well, I think it's a super interesting channel because they work, physical stores work so well with online. We've had lots of companies talking about the benefits of acting in an omni-channel way. Customers view a brand as a brand, not as a particular channel, right? You know, if you are shopping at, let's say, Tesco, whether it's online or whether it's in store, it's the same company, right? And what a number of different retailers around the world have noticed is that omni-channel customers are more valuable than single-channel customers, for starters, which is fantastic. So people buy more and they buy more frequently. My theory is that they'd also recommend and talk about the brand much more than they would for a single-channel business. And we've also seen some really interesting results from companies like Next, for example, where when they open a physical store in a geographic location, they see online sales boosting in that same geographic area, which is a fantastic opportunity because a customer may never even enter that shop, but they're still becoming more aware of the brand, becoming more involved with the brand, and ultimately becoming a customer, a stronger customer as well.
They really do work so well hand in hand, don't they? The physical and the online space. If you've got, I would caveat it with, if you've got a decent brand story or a good reason, you know, set of values, objectives, if there's a good core to your business, it will work. If there isn't, then you're just duplicating problems, aren't you?
Yes. So understanding the role of the store is really crucial. And that's going to define what it is that your store does and how you present it to customers. It's going to change what sort of store strategy you want to go for. So there's a number of different ways, for example, that you could go into physical retail, whether it's through opening just perhaps a single great big flagship like companies like Gymshark have done recently. Or it could be around opening pop-ups, for example, that are there for maybe a day, maybe a week, maybe a few months. Or it could, of course, be going full in and opening up a nationwide chain of stores like we've seen lots of other companies doing as well. Or, of course, all of the above. And you could take a bit of a hybrid approach to that.
You mentioned pop-ups there, which is, as a marketer, is obviously the version of physical retail I'm most fascinated by because they create so much noise and excitement around the brand. I always think, and please tell me if I'm massively off the game with this, that a core part of any good pop-up strategy is buying correctly, as in buying your pop-up space correctly and getting that for the right price. Because it's short term, you should be able to get a crazy good deal on your square footage. And that's going to be 50% of your success. Obviously, you have to have a good concept, good product, good marketing, etc. But is that negotiating with the landlord a super important part of the pop-up piece?
Well, I think it is. It's, you know, there's a huge amount of effort that goes into making a pop-up, particularly if it's a super short pop-up, like a, you know, a one-day special like we've seen some big companies go after more recently. I think if we're thinking about finances there, actually for a one-day pop-up, there's no way that store is washing its face in as much as, you know, by the time you've got all of the planning and the strategizing, you take all of those sort of total hours of effort and all of the cost that goes into that, by the time you play that out, there's no way, like I say, you're going to turn a profit on that. So it's very much a marketing activity to say, actually, how do we activate the brand with a very particular set of customers in that geographic area? You're not going to travel halfway across the country for a one-day pop-up, or maybe you will if it's a super exciting brand that you're hugely passionate about. Probably one for further discussion. But it's actually, how do you then turn that and how do you maximize the use of that? So ensuring that you're all over social media, for example, and sharing a lot about that. We've seen companies like Shein, actually, like them or not, do that effectively to boost that up.
We may have to get you back to do a pure pop-up episode at some point in the future. So I just dived us into pop-ups. What's working? What's the best strategies in retail at the moment? Is it the flagships? Is it the pop-ups? Is it going to market stalls? Is it long leases and store expansion? What seems to be in, I guess, in vogue? What's working for people at the moment?
It depends is my answer on that one.
Sorry to thought it might so be
but let's just think of some of the factors that play into that, because first things first, what category are you in? It really makes a huge difference. You know, categories like grocery and food are still hugely offline sectors, and overall that whole sector accounts for a significant portion of the retail sector overall. So if you're in that sector, actually offline is going to be important, and it's going to be important to be conveniently located for your customers. So again, people are not going to travel significant distances for a weekly shop, for example. But other categories are very different. So it really depends, what is it that you want to be doing? You know, going back to what I was talking about, the role of the store, what is it you want to be doing? How is that customer mission going to be completed? Is it the type of store that you're going to want customers to go to on a regular basis? If it is, then you're going to need that broad network of stores closely located. You know, we see that in the US with Walmart, who have, of course, perhaps out of all retailers in the whole world, the best store network in terms of proximity to, I can't remember the exact stat, but it's very close for, let's say, 90% of US consumers. That's going to be important if you're wanting regular visits. If you're wanting that irregular visit, it's perhaps a passion-based category or product or role that you want, then again, you can have a bigger flagship that people will travel to, and that could be fantastic. And we've seen, like I say, lots of different companies doing some fantastic things. And you've got companies, again, picking out some of the big companies that people will be familiar with, companies like Nike, who take their flagship stores and they add in all sorts of additional services, such as, you know, designing your own trainer, for example, or customizing products in other ways, that actually, if you're a passionate brand advocate, you will travel that distance to be able to access those unique services. It's sort of money can't buy opportunities that these flagship stores can open up. And again, really fantastic opportunities if you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. If you're not clear, it is a very easy way to burn a lot of money very quickly, by the way.
Yes, let's dwell on that mistake piece for a moment. Obviously, not having a plan is a pretty big old part of the things to avoid before having a go at physical retail. What else would be, I guess, on your list of common mistakes or things to avoid that you see people doing?
Well, let's just firstly think about that, not having a plan, just for a split second, because it's very easy to look at other retailers, maybe direct competitors, maybe in other categories, and think, oh, well, they're doing amazingly. They're talking about the success of stores or any other initiative to say, oh, I'll do some of that as well, please. That's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
So keeping up with the Joneses is definitely not a mistake we want to be making then. So what other mistakes do we want to be avoiding?
So I think we really need to go back to basics when we're thinking about using our physical stores and thinking about omnichannel, you know, aspects like having clear alignment and consistent pricing and promos between your physical stores and your online channels is so important, because you don't want to be, let's say, taking a customer from online. They've seen a great price. They want to go into store to just touch and feel a product or ask a question. And then suddenly it's 5% more expensive, or actually that promotion that I wanted to get doesn't exist. And store colleagues can't access it. And it's just a recipe for disaster, things like that. We've also got, of course, stores, the obvious omnichannel proposition is around click and collect, right? So actually, how does that work? Is it seamless? You've got companies like Screwfix and Toolstation here in the UK. that are offering click and collect, picking from stores where your order can be ready in 1 or 2 minutes. You know, that is a fantastic proposition rather than perhaps, oh, there are some certainly some other companies that I can think of that this is incredibly slow.
Yeah, so that click and collect piece, totally get what you're saying there. I remember I was hosting a panel at a big conference in London, gosh, maybe 5-6 years ago now, where one high street retailer, who I'm not going to name because I do believe they fixed it now, their click and collect service was parcels being packed in the warehouse and posted to the store to then be picked up by the customer, which is the least advantageous way of doing click and collect and the most expensive, because basically the customer's using every single channel for one order. So yeah, definitely requires some thinking through. So we've got we had about getting consistency across the channels. We had the click and collect piece. Have you got one more common mistake we need to avoid?
We've got to think like customers, right? When we're buying from a brand online and we see the store of that same brand, to us as customers, it's the same company. So when we want to then return that online order into store, we've got to be able to do that. A, we've got to be able to do that. And B, it's got to be simple and seamless, right? We don't want to be having to jump through a million hoops because we've ordered on one channel and we're returning to another. That, from a customer's point of view, is just such an important feature.
I love that you're bringing that up. I love that you're talking about kind of ops and systems and stuff that don't affect retail. For anyone who thought this was going to be a conversation about POS systems and shelving, very much not, people. Those are the easy things. Okay, let's move on from mistakes, Oliver. You've mentioned about how there's a lot of cash being invested in a physical store. There's a lot of time, a lot of planning invested in it. I think a lot of people have that kind of fear that it's an asset they're paying a lot of money for. It's a channel they're paying a lot of money for that only really washes its face and makes some money on a Saturday. So how can we be clever about how we use that investment to do things that aren't directly handing a bag to a customer and taking some cash off them in return?
So there's a couple of different thoughts here. So firstly, let's look at a company like Apple, right? Who arguably have some of the most fantastic stores around the world. And they're absolutely packed, as I'm sure people can recollect and perhaps even experience, right? Some of those stores will not be making a profit on a daily, weekly, or even annual basis, right? But it's a brand investment. It's an investment to say, actually, this is who we are as a company. This is what we're standing for. And this is how you can engage with us. And we're building that brand loyalty. Overall, by the time you take in that love for the Apple brand in this instance, or any other brand, that pays dividends hugely. So that's the first big opportunity of thinking about a store bigger than a simple store P&L, let's say. The other factor is, how can you really drive lots of value from the proverbial four walls of the building? So it's a great place for accessing brand experts, real deep product knowledge specialists. They understand the customer, they understand the product as well. And how can we use that? You've got companies like Currys, for example, and plenty of others as well around the world that are being able to connect their online customers to their physical store colleagues to be able to say, if you've got a question, let's connect you to someone in a store that could perhaps hold up the product to the camera and give you a short demo or explain a particular feature. And that can be so engaging. It puts the customer directly in touch with those experts that exist in the store already. You also have got this fantastic setting for creating content as well. We're, of course, very aware of the rise of social media and all of the different channels there. Live shopping as well is another big opportunity. And again, you've got the experts, you've got the product, you've got the setting. Let's use these pieces to create something much bigger than the whole, where 1 plus 1 is bigger than 2, right? So I think there's a fantastic opportunity for really understanding what's sitting at the heart of stores and putting that together to create more than just sales or perhaps even returns, right?
I love those tips, Oliver. So, so cool. Is there anything we've missed that we should tell the audience about before they dive into retail, before we go into the insider tips round?
So I think what we haven't touched on is actually around endless aisle, which again is a big opportunity, not all stores can carry the entire range for physical space constraints, right? And actually, how are you presenting that to the customer? We've seen lots of companies putting up digital screens, for example, that in my experience, they're just not used, right? No one goes up to a digital screen and starts interacting with it. So how can you take that same concept, the endless aisle, the full range, and put it in the hands of your store colleagues to be able to help out customers? Because there is value in having that range and offering it to your customers that are standing there right in front of you. But you've got to do it in a more engaging way than just putting a screen there. When, by the way, everyone has a screen in their pocket or their bag already, right? So they can access that. But what is the value add of having, like I say, those experts talking to your customers?
Such a good point, Oliver. That's kind of one of those biggest examples at the moment of, oh, we should buy the hardware and put the shiny thing in the store and it'll all be good. And it's like, no, you've completely missed the strategic aims there, everybody. But anyway, I could rant on that for a while. I'll save everyone that. Oliver, it's been great picking your brains about physical retail. Listeners, remember to stay tuned right to the end so you don't miss out on Oliver's insider tips, plus my suggestions for more free resources to help you improve things even further in your business.
Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee, knowing, as they do, that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience. Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain and Italy by visiting keepopt.com/Shopify and downloading the report. That's keepopt.com/Shopify.
Okay, Oliver, so far we've gone deep into selling via physical stores. Now you get to wow us with your insider knowledge about the whole of omnichannel e-commerce retail, call it what you will. So for the following questions, your answer can be anything to do with all of that, which of course does include everything we've already been talking about. So Oliver, are you ready for these?
Fire away.
Okay, let's start with newbie advice. If we've inspired someone to take their first step, what do they need to know to give themselves the best chance of success?
So a couple of things, you've got to be thinking about the role of the store. What is the purpose of putting this investment into place? How are you going to blend that in with the customer experience? You know, think about also your existing customer base. How can you encourage those individuals to explore your physical store? And how can you encourage your brand new customers that have just walked past your store to engage and understand more about what your online offering is?
All comes back to the plan and the objectives, which is so true in everything. I think, guys, you're going to hear that an awful lot in every single one of these episodes about Omnichannel. Now, once you've started, of course, you've got to keep optimizing. So what's your favorite way to improve performance?
Coming back to it, it's about focusing on what matters most to your customers and to your business, and really make sure that you're doing that effectively. If you lose sight of what matters most, you end up frittering money away, frankly. So really, depending on what your category is, depending on what your brand is, what you want to be doing, back to the role, think about using this as your guiding light to say, well, this is what we need to keep optimizing.
Love that. Yeah. Focus, focus, focus. If someone listening wants to learn more, is there a cheap or free resource you would recommend?
So fellow podcaster, the Retail Transformation Show is my podcast, and talking about omnichannel a lot on there. A particular episode that I thought everyone might enjoy is episode 262, which is all about exploring the differences between omnichannel and unified commerce as a starting point.
You're going to have to quickly give people a definition of a unified commerce for that one, Oliver. Sorry.
Well, it takes a whole podcast episode, but really it's one of the big new buzzwords. So omnichannel, we've had in our wider lexicon for the last 10 years or so.
20. I was talking about it in the early 2000s, so we're going to say 20.
Well, there we go.
So long.
Unified commerce has started to come out more and more in recent events and in sort of expert articles. And that's what that whole episode is talking about, really. What is omnichannel? What is unified commerce? And very quickly, they're the same thing, but it's important to think about this whole topic from the customer proposition point of view and then the back end plumbing point of view. How is the operation working to support that customer proposition? How are your systems set up to support that customer proposition?
Ooh, nice. I may well have to go and I'm going to go and add that to my playlist because that is it's a good one. Thank you. Thank you very much for that recommendation too, Oliver. So what was that episode number what of what show?
That is the Retail Transformation Show, which you can find in your favorite podcast app that I'm sure you're listening to right now. And it's episode 262, number 262.
There we go, everybody. Go and have a listen to that after this. And finally, it's crystal ball time. What's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months that we should be getting ready for?
Well, we touched on it earlier. Social commerce is a huge opportunity and we've seen massive increases through the likes of TikTok and live shopping. And I believe those are going to grow even more. And I think there's a big opportunity to bring that social commerce into physical stores through elements like we spoke about around content creation, around accessing the experts that are in store that truly understand customers and are talking to customers day in, day out. And physical stores, in my view, present a fantastic opportunity to bring this expertise, the knowledge, the passion into the wider world through social commerce.
Love it. Thank you so much, Oliver. It's been awesome catching up with you. Before we say goodbye to you, though, can you please let the listeners know where they can get in touch with you and your business?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. My name is Oliver Banks, and I thought listeners might also be interested in my book, which is called Driving Retail Transformation, How to Navigate Disruption and Change, which is available in all the usual places that books are sold, Amazon, your local bookstore, et cetera, et cetera. Or you can find out more at drivingretailtransformation.com.
Nice. And yeah, definitely worth checking out Oliver's book if you are thinking of getting involved in the retail space. It's going to help you get it right first time rather than making all those many mistakes that people make. Oliver, thank you so much for coming on the Keep Optimizing podcast. It's been brilliant finally getting to catch up with you on this podcasting format. So thank you so much for sharing so much with us.
Well, it's been a real blast, Chloe. A fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been a real pleasure.
What a great way to kick off our little month on omnichannel selling, not least because so much of what Oliver was recommending there is going to stand you in good stead, whichever one of the channels you're choosing to grow your business into. You always have to know why you're doing it, how it's going to help the customers, what the customers expect, what your plan is. Work out all those key things before you do anything. And a lot of his, you know, those mistakes he was saying we should avoid, they count for marketplaces, they count for wholesale. A lot of it is very, very similar. So a really good way to kick off Omnichannel Month. And an interesting how much of it's about getting the systems and the processes in place, not just a pretty shop with the right products in it. You can get the links to all those things we discussed, the full transcript of the episode, important notes and more at keepoptimizing.com, or use our special direct episode short links. Just put keepopt.com/episode number into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the correct episode page. And when you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Keep Optimizing podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to continue learning about Omnichannel right now, then you could listen to the podcast episode that Oliver recommended. You can also get into Marketplaces, which is the other channel we've covered in a lot of depth on the show before, by scrolling back up your feed to episodes 115 to 117, where we did 3 episodes last year on Marketplaces. You can also find all our Omnichannel content via the short link keepopt.com/omnichannel, where we've pulled together past episodes that touch on this topic, and you'll see the rest of this month's content going live there as it launches. Please do tell your fellow marketers about the show, because I want to help as many marketers as possible to improve the performance of their e-commerce marketing. Have a great week and make sure you listen to the next episode so I can help you to keep optimizing your marketing.
Access everything Keep Optimizing at keepoptimizing.com. That's with an S, not a Z.
Don't Don't forget to download Shopify's new industry report featuring my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting keepopt.com/Shopify.